Jay Marvin, with all the sensitivity on a of a snail on a winter day. I don't even think that makes any sense, but it sounded good. 8:07, 7 minutes after 8 here on AM 760 Progressive Talk. Going to be a great day today, mostly a sunny high of 60. Good to have you along. Thanks for choosing us and wanting to hang out with us. The American Small Business League has endorsed Senator Barack Obama for president. President and founder Lloyd Chapman joins the show to talk about why they endorse Obama and what his stance is on small business. And you can go to ASBL.com. And let's welcome Lloyd back. Lloyd, good to have you back.
Thanks, Jay. How you doing?
I'm doing good. All right, why the endorsement of Barack Obama and not Hillary Clinton?
Well, that's a good question. Number one, he's the only presidential candidate that's come out and has supported small businesses and specifically talked about issues about small businesses. And in particular, Senator Obama has come out and said he's against the diversion of federal small business contracts to Fortune 500 corporations. And I'll have to say that, I like Hillary Clinton, and I had the opportunity to meet President Clinton on several occasions back when he was in the White House. But I'll have to say I was really disappointed in their decisions and their policies. And some of their policies were, what I'll have to say, is sort of anti-small business. They had some people they appointed. A guy named Steve Kelman was appointed the head of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, and he was sort of known as not, pro-small business. And I guess I was actually watching CNN, and I saw a poll that showed that if Hillary Clinton ran against John McCain, she wouldn't win. And if Barack Obama did, he would win. So it was a pretty easy decision. It seems to me, and I could be wrong here, I'll get your advice on this, but if the polls show that Hillary can't beat McCain and you're a Democrat, a vote for Hillary sort of seems like a vote for McCain. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I don't necessarily think that may be the case. I mean, I was talking to somebody yesterday. I think when you get into that race, if you got into that race between McCain and Hillary Clinton, the race would tighten. The poll numbers would tighten. I would predict almost to a dead heat. With Barack Obama, I think that he would beat McCain, but I think that it would still be relatively tight.
Yeah, to me it's like a horse race. If you're going to bet on somebody, if you had to bet your life on who's going to win, I think you'd probably bet on Obama as opposed to Hillary for beating McCain. He looks like he's got a better chance. But again, to tell you the truth, for us, it really wasn't based on that totally. It was based on the fact that he's the only person running for a president, either Democrat or Republican, that's come out and made a statement, that he's against the diversion of billions of dollars in federal small business contracts to big businesses. I also like the fact, I was watching him on debate every night, he's not taking money from lobbyists. And I'm very impressed with that. He's got a campaign that's well-funded, and his campaign is funded by Americans. I think he said his average contribution is like $108. That's very impressive. I think that's sort of unparalleled, in recent political history.
I was talking to a friend who's a small businessman. He said to me, I was for Obama, except when he started talking about raising taxes, which, of course, equals out to rolling back the Bush tax cuts. He claims that that would hurt small business.
I'll tell you something. I was watching, I guess it was CNN. They were talking about how the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is ultra-conservative Republicans, on their website say that if John McCain's elected president, you'd have to raise taxes. And so I think no matter who's president, what you're going to see is they're going to have to raise taxes. We've got, the war, which costs like $1 billion a day, something like that. And I don't think, it doesn't matter who is going to be the president, I'm afraid they're going to have to raise taxes. And again, even the Republican think tanks are saying that. So, if Obama's president, the things he's going to do for small businesses will far outweigh higher taxes. Let's just say this, what would you rather make, $20,000 a year and lower taxes, or $500,000 a year and pay higher taxes? I'd rather pay higher taxes on $500,000 than low taxes on $20,000. And I think that under Barack Obama, small businesses are going to grow and prosper like never before because he's actually going to do something. And again, this issue of the diversion of small business contracts to big companies is almost like, taboo. You just don't see politicians talking about it. They're afraid to talk about it because, You know, you're talking about taking contracts away from the biggest companies in America, and I think it's very bold and brave of him to come out and say, look, I don't think that Fortune 500 corporations should get small business contracts, and I'll stop it. So I'm very happy to see him do that. It's a very easy decision, you know, to back him.
12 minutes after 8 here on AM 760 Progressive Talk, and we've got Lloyd Chapman from the Small Business League. This person also told me that the reason that those funds get diverted to those companies is because they can do the jobs better than small companies. Is that true?
Absolutely not. I'll tell you something. I worked in a business for, 15 years that sold the computer products to government every day, and to tell you the truth, just the opposite is true. Small businesses can react very quickly. Think about it like an aircraft carrier or speedboat, which can turn around quicker. So, small businesses can be very responsive. If a government buyer calls up at, 4 o'clock in the afternoon and says, I've got to have this tomorrow, a small business can go back there and pull off the shelf and take it down to FedEx, and it can be there the next day. Big companies can't do that. So that's just absolutely not true. There's so many misconceptions about that. But basically, the federal government does just hundreds of billions in what's called spot purchases. And I think the average order that the government places probably on a daily basis is somewhere around $2,000 or $3,000. So the notion that the small businesses can't handle the work is just absolutely not true. In fact, I think probably there's a strong argument to say the opposite. But and by the way, remember this, federal law says 23% of the total value of all prime contracts and subcontracts should go to small businesses. That means the big businesses, get, 77%? The second thing is, this is a law. It's not like a suggestion or something. It's a federal law. It's been in place, I think, for 50 years. So for anyone to try to say that the government, has to give small business contracts to Boeing because Boeing's the only company that can perform it, it's just not true. It's just absolutely not true. And, by the way, the other thing is, if you're going to give the contracts to Boeing, don't call them small business contracts. How about that?
Yeah.
If you're going to give Lockheed and Boeing and Bechtel and Halliburton, don't say they're a small business. Just say, okay, this is a contract we're giving to Lockheed, and it's a large business contract. So I'd be happy if the government would just quit calling contracts to Fortune 500 corporations small business contracts. That would be a minor victory.
The same guy said to me too that the Small Business Administration should be abolished because all they do is prop up businesses that eventually fail.
I believe Apple was one of the businesses that were propped up by the SBA. Again, the funny thing, propped up. The SBA helps small businesses grow and prosper. FedEx, by the way, got a small business loan. As does, I believe, it was Apple. So people need to understand. In fact, I'll tell you something funny, and you and I can maybe help clear this up. 98% of all American companies have less than 100 employees. And those businesses employ just under 60% of our nation's population. And those are the companies where most Americans work. There's where the jobs are created. That's where the tax revenue comes from. And when you think about the SBA propping up small businesses, it's kind of like, the SBA is the smallest agency in Washington. I think their budget is $500 million. You can't buy an airplane, for what the SBA budget is. So it's a very, very small agency, and I think it's really very reasonable to have one agency in Washington to help the 25 million small businesses where most Americans work. So have this guy call me. You've got my phone number. I'm going to talk to that guy. You give him my cell phone number and tell him to call me. I'll fly him out to California and take him out to lunch. But, small businesses are the backbone of our nation's economy, always has been, and that's why the Small Business Act was passed back in, 1953? And it certainly makes sense to ensure that a minimum of 23% of government contracts go to the companies where most Americans work and where most of the tax revenue comes from. My mind is flooded with thoughts here. Your friend talks about propping up companies. The federal government has propped up Chrysler, Lockheed. The federal government routinely props up these big Fortune 500 corporations. I can remember, you can remember back, 1980, when the government made loans to Chrysler to keep them in business?
Well, yeah, they guaranteed loans to them, yeah.
Yeah, and I think they did the same thing for Lockheed back sometime in the 70s. So, You know, if the government is propping anybody up, it's these big Fortune 500 corporations, not small businesses. And the government, you know, when the government passes legislation, you can bet your bottom dollar that it's going to benefit Fortune 500 corporations, quite often to the detriment. I think about the when the Bush administration passed that legislation changing the bankruptcy laws. And, you know, Fortune 500 corporations don't file bankruptcy. You know, small business owners do that are struggling, you know, to keep their businesses open. So that was something that was done in favor of big companies to the detriment of middle-class America. But you have this guy call me, and I'll straighten him out, Jay.
All right, I will have him call you. You know, the other thing, where does all of this misinformation come from?
Well, one source is the $2 million a day the Bush administration spends in public relations fees. The General Accounting Office issued a report about 2 years ago that said the Bush administration had hired the three largest public relations firms in the country and probably in the world, and they pay them $2 million a day. So you can imagine the type of propaganda that gets pumped out of these firms. In fact, the word propaganda, the GAO found out that the White House was guilty of generating propaganda, which is against federal law. So the White House was producing, if you saw it on television, would look like a news program.
Right, actually, that's exactly right, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah, and they got caught for it.
Yeah, they were bribing journalists. Was it Armstrong Williams? They paid him a quarter of $1 million to write stories about how great George Bush was. So, you know, so the misinformation comes from, you know, the White House. And when you're thinking about the volume of contracts we're talking about, I've had four federal officials, one of them was a Bush family friend, that told me that a minimum of half of all federal small business contracts go to big companies. And I had another gentleman who was had been involved in an investigation, told me it was 86%. So I've had, you know, government officials tell me between $65 and $100 billion a year in government contracts goes to these big companies. And think how hard Fortune 500 corporations are going to fight to keep $100 billion a year in government contracts. So they're capable of putting out a lot of misinformation themselves.
Just amazes me that this guy is even worried about his legacy. I mean, what can these guys do anything? I don't. They do anything right?
The Bush administration?
Yeah. The Congress, the Republican-controlled Congress for so long?
You know, to tell you the truth, and remember, you know, I've discussed this before in your show, I was a lifelong Republican. In my office, I've got a picture of me and Gerald Ford and a picture of, you know, George Herbert Walker Bush. And to tell you the truth, I can't think of anything right now that I would say, gosh, I'm really glad that they did that. The thing that I think about, I was watching the debates the other night, and Obama brought up the fact that ExxonMobil made $11 billion in a quarter. And then this yesterday morning, I saw CNN that oil reserves are at a 14-year high. So you know, the oil companies are telling us, oh, gosh, you know, the price of oil's gone up, and there's a shortage, and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, that shouldn't generate record profits like that. But my point is, I guess, in general, the Bush administration has passed legislation that has helped big businesses. And, you know, we're in a recession, and ExxonMobil is making $11 billion a quarter, the highest profits of any corporations in the history of mankind. So, again, I want people to realize that the Republican Party has a, you know, 30-year track record of being concerned about Fortune 500 corporations and big businesses and not small businesses. And any Republican friends of mine or any of your Republican listeners need to realize that Ronald Reagan tried to close the Small Business Administration, again, the only agency to help America's small businesses. He tried to close it for 2 years. And then when that didn't work, very quietly, and what I'm told by people in Washington, illegally changed the definition of a small business. You know, one way to try to repeal the Small Business Act is change the definition. And Reagan's people very quietly over the weekend changed it from 100 to 500. And when you've got statistics from the U.S. Census Bureau that show us that 89% of all U.S. firms have less than 20 employees, a size standard of 500 is a little too high. But again, I would be if somebody put a gun to my head and say, you know, give me the three, you know, best piece of legislation passed during the Bush administration, they'd have to shoot me because I couldn't think of anything. But I could certainly think of, you know, an endless list of legislation that's been passed that I think is not good for our country.
All right, Lloyd Chapman. Lloyd Chapman from the Small Business League. Thank you, man. Thanks for your time once again.
Thank you.
And you know we'll have you back real soon.
All righty.
All right, thanks, Lloyd. There's Lloyd Chapman from the Small Business Administration. The Small Business League, talking about the SBA and talking about the fact that ASBL has endorsed Senator Barack Obama for president. All right, it's 8:22, 22 minutes after 8 here, AM 760 Progressive Talk. Jay Marvin along with you and John Turk in traffic.
Hey, Jack, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, a rumor around town says you might be thinking about going down to the shore.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go down to the shore.
What are you going to do down there?
I don't know. Play some video games, buy some Def Leppard t-shirts.
Don't forget your Motley Crue t-shirt. You know, all proceeds go to get their lead singer out of jail.
Uh-huh.
Can't wait to go down. Hey, are you going to check out the sandbar while you're down there?
What's the sandbar?
That's a place that lets 16-year-old kids drink.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, cool.
Guess he's going to be there.
That's the Dead Milkman, 826, 26 minutes after 8 here on AM 760 Progressive Talk. Mostly sunny, high today, 60. Don't accuse us of playing anything in the mainstream on this program, I'll tell you what. Mario Solis Marich. This afternoon, my man. All right, I can't go today without bringing this up. I really can't. This is in the Denver Post. Jewish athletes lose off court. State High School Board says it won't change playoff times to fit with the Sabbath. The Colorado High School Activities Association Board reaffirmed Wednesday that it will not jump through hoops to reschedule regional and state basketball finals for a Jewish team that won't play on Saturdays, their Sabbath. Several state lawmakers pressed the association to push back a March 8th regional finals game until after sundown that Saturday so that the Herzl Rocky Mountain Hebrew Academy could compete. The Herzl RMHA Tigers still have one game to win before securing one of two regional berths. The school's girls team is in the same situation. Can you even believe this? We made accommodations for them at the district level, CHASAA Commissioner Bill Reeder said. It's difficult to reschedule at the regional level. It's impossible at the state level. Why? Why is it impossible? Why aren't these kids given the chance to win the championship that they've worked so hard to get? Now, lawmakers can't pass a law in time to make the CHASAA follow allow the team's religious observance of the Sabbath, but they wanted to urge officials to do it. And if you go read the story is absolutely ridiculous. The Companion Academy, a Seventh-day Adventist school, which also observes the Sabbath on Saturday, is also shut out of the state tournament. Which is ridiculous. Now this guy Reeder says the rule is 80 years old. Its origin may have been religious or not, but every athlete needs one day of rest a week. Sunday is the day the fewest number of people work, Reeder said. They can have family time. I have great respect and admiration for Jewish religious beliefs, Reeder said, but we speak and work for 110,000 athletes and 340 member schools, all with different needs and desires. We can't be all things to all people. Well, wait a minute. Why is the day off Sunday? Because Sunday in Christianity is a traditional church day, right? Other than that, Wednesday. This is religious insensitivity. So because these kids can't play until after sundown on Saturday, this association, the Colorado High School Activities Association, can't move the time of the game Their refusal sucks. And I think it's religious discrimination as well as insensitivity. And I wonder how much the Colorado High School Activities Association gets from taxpayer money. Anybody got any ideas about that? So here we go. We're back to the whole subject of religious wars and about accommodating all points of view and why it is. I mean, this ranks right down to the female, I believe it was, high school student who was not allowed to play volleyball because she was Muslim and wanted to wear a veil. I mean, are we that intolerant? And this story is just awful. It's just awful any way you look at it. It's just wrong. So now these kids, because of their religion, even though they played their hearts out, now they don't get to get into the regional finals. Because the Colorado High School Activities Association goes by an 80-year-old rule, and this is 2008, soon to be 2009. Oh, and the rule, by the way, no playing, no schedule on Sunday. Now, if that's not religiously tilted, I don't know what is. Because what you're making these kids do is you're making them choose between their faith and their ability to compete. Which is wrong. I mean, don't we want kids to have and practice their faith? Of course we do. We just want to play, said Hertz RMHA president Avi Hazel. He said it's a tricky situation for us. We don't want to fight with the CHASS in the media. I just find it to be disgusting. This is America in 2008, not 80 years ago. You're telling me you can't move the game to be able to accommodate religious considerations? If this were a Christian situation, what do you think would happen? And why can't they play on Sunday? I think you know what the answer is. 303-713-7600. We'll take your calls coming up. I want to hear your opinion. John Turk, traffic.
Break it on down. Woo! Bless you. Woo! Bless you. Woo! Oh, bless you. Woo! Bless you.
Where are you going, my beautiful Woo! Friend?
Good morning. 836, 36 minutes after the hour. Mostly sunny. High today, 60. Going to be a wonderful day outside. And it's good to have you along. Nice to have you here. Jewish athletes lose off court. This is the Colorado High School Activities Association reaffirmed Wednesday that it would not jump through hoops to reschedule national and state basketball finals for a Jewish team that won't play on Saturdays during the Sabbath. And they're operating off an 80-year-old rule here. And I mean, it's ridiculous. Here's Mike in Black Forest. Mike, you're on AM760. Good morning.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, man.
I listen to you all the time and called you a couple of years ago, calling George Bush fourth grade playground liar. But anyhow, I've head coached 37 different high school sports, and I know Bill Reeder very well, and he's an incredible man. He's faced with many, many tough decisions, and this being one of them. It is a private organization, and my understanding would be that there are no taxpayer dollars involved. I just finished reading the Gazette, and I think some legislator from Colorado said, you know, because of that, they have no acting authority. I would like to say that these schools, the religious schools, who are very involved, they choose to join CHASA. And when they choose to join CHASA, they choose the rules that are in effect. I would like to do some stuff. Sunday is not about religion and Christianity. Sunday rule is about high school football coaches that just won't stop. And it's basically a day off. And,
well, why is the day off on Sunday?
You know, that I don't know. I'm guessing because Saturday's a regular day for, you know, Friday night, Saturday night is just all Thursday night now. The coaches don't even like Thursday night because of breaks rhythm. You know, one time they play Thursday at 7, and then they play Saturday at 1, and their practices are messed up. I will say that I, as a coach, played a baseball game on Sunday in the Final Four. It got rained out. The semifinals for me got rained out Saturday afternoon, and we played at 8 in the morning. The winners played at 11, and they played championship at, like, 1. I don't think you maybe understand the ramification. I just spent 3 days at the state wrestling tournament last week. They have 2A, 3A. I'm not real sure. I've never heard of the school. Don't know. But there's ramifications. It's not about perhaps this game. This game perhaps could be changed after dark. But I'm going to guess.
Well, they don't want to do it.
No. Well, I'm talking about ramifications. I'm talking looking down the road.
What kind of ramifications?
Well, the championship games for, say, 2A, 3A are played Saturday afternoon. You're renting the Pepsi Center, and what they do is they have this facility rented, and they come in, and they will play the 2A game, and then the 3A girls, or the girls game, and then the 3A boys, and then the girls.
Well, so you bump them all back.
Bump them all back to where?
You bump them all back to later in the evening.
Jay, we just did the state wrestling championships, and I'm telling you, they wrestle all day long. It doesn't matter who you are, where you're from. They've rented this facility, and it becomes an impossibility. I coached high school wrestling. It's my drug. But, you know, when you talk about religion and you talk about headdress and you talk about my sport, there's tremendous regulations because I'm attacking your head all the time. And so, you know, where are you going to end with this?
Where you're going to end with it is where you're going to end with it is you're going to end this way. You're going to do the right thing, which is you're going to make accommodations. And you're not going to cite that it's an 80-year-old rule, and you're not going to come up with excuses about it.
Right,
because,
I agree.
Because in the year 2008 going into 2009, this society and organizations within this society have to be about accommodation. They do not have to be about one person's agenda. And this guy saying that, well, the law is 80 years old, and you know we can't do this, and giving all these other excuses. Come on, Mike. You know better than that.
I agree that was an easy grab going backwards. I mean, one of my favorite quotes is Jack Nicholson, "I just want toast," you know? It's just so simple. You know, the guy doesn't have toast. But what I'm saying is that it's not that simple. I can tell you my experience being involved in wrestling since 1978 at any level, officiating, coaching, or whatever, and now just as a spectator, that I have seen many, many kids over the years win on a Friday night or a Thursday night and forfeit a wrestling match on a Saturday because of their religion. And this really
But you know what? You talk about over the years. Why now in 2008? Why now is this all of a sudden like we can't do this? You want to know something? Where there's a will, there's a way.
I agree.
And there is a way, and all you have to do is sit down and figure it out. It's only one game. It's not the whole thing, and it's not that complicated, man.
It's not. first off, I don't think it's only one game. I was talking to you about down the road, and what are you going to do at the state tournament? What are you going to do
but you're
with
make,
the wrestling
you're,
tournament?
You're,
what are you going to do at
you're,
the state?
You're going to make accommodations. That's what you're going to do.
What are you, you're going to run the state track tournament on a completely – I mean, this is not just this.
Let me ask you something. And, Let me ask you something, and I want you to answer honestly. Is this thing for adults or is it for kids?
This thing is that's a good question, because I have a real rough time with, like, USA Wrestling, and they think they're putting a kid in college or on the Olympics, and it's about the education of kids, period. And Bill Reeder, believe me, that man understands that it's about the education of kids.
Then it's about kids.
It's totally about kids.
Okay,
about kids.
Okay,
yeah.
So then what you do is you go to a group of kids, and you say to them, well, here's the choice you got. Your faith or competition. And if you choose your faith, congratulations, you're not treated like the other kids because you're Jewish.
Right. Could I interject something now?
Sure.
I'm not real sure with Bill saying, it's an 80-year-old rule. I think with the emergence of newer schools, and, I really don't know. I'm just speculating right now. I'm thinking with the emergence of newer schools that this has not occurred. I can tell you it has occurred in wrestling, because when you have these schools that are, say, religious schools, and I'm not real good at political correctness, they might have five kids that want to wrestle or two kids that want to wrestle. And so they go ahead and run a wrestling program, but they have not yet, say this school in particular, because if they had, then this issue would have come up before when you ask the question, why now? That's a great question. I'm going to guess that this is a new situation. They've done this rule way back when, for whatever reason, And then I really would like to say it's to me, it's like these homeowners with, whatever you call them, homeowners group. If you don't want to follow the rules, don't join the group.
Yeah, but
something. I agree.
Yeah, you know what though? That's not.
Yeah.
I mean, is that how we're going to operate now? If you don't like the rules, don't join. So we're going to start excluding people based on their religious preference because they don't want to follow an 80-year-old rule. Where this guy Reeder is quoted in the paper as saying that that he does respect the Jewish religion, but he says that the rule is 80 years old. Its origin may have been religious or not. But every athlete needs one day of rest a week. Sunday is the day the fewest number of people work. They can have family time. Where did that whole concept of not working on Sunday and that whole where did that all originate from? Did somebody just go, "Oh, we'll make it on Sunday"?
That's way beyond me.
It's religious.
I totally agree.
It starts with religion.
Yeah. No, I understand that. I understand that. We've all grown up thinking about Sunday as that seventh day or whatever,
Not me.
Yeah.
Not
no,
me, pal.
Either. Me either. Yeah. No, me either. But, I don't know. All I want to say is that Bill Reeder's a great guy. I have known him for a long time.
Well, I'm not attacking him.
Okay.
I'm not attacking him personally.
No, I don't believe you have.
I think it's the whole organization has got a problem.
Yeah. This is the old cop between a rock and a hard place. But
they're creating that rock and that hard place. They could figure this out. Come on, we're all adults.
Yeah, in some ways, I agree with you, but I still see it is, this is the, it's tough for everybody to be happy. And I understand how during the season you can do those kinds of things. But when you rent this arena and
you can still make the adjustments. I've been involved and have seen plenty of things where they have rented arenas, where they've rented venues, and they've had to change it due to one problem or another. And this isn't even a problem. But it boils down to this. It boils down to going to these kids who are Jewish and saying, hey, you play great basketball or whatever. You've made it in to the semifinals.
Right.
But you know what? Here's the deal. You can't play in the semifinals, and you can't play in the finals because you're Jewish. That's what you're really saying.
And
that's the wrong message to send any kid.
I totally understand. I totally understand both sides of and everything, and I just don't think that having not been totally immersed. You know, you constantly tell people that you've been in the broadcasting industry, and then unless you understand the comings and the goings and the hirings and the firings, that we're not really in a position to, you know, dig down deep and blah, blah, blah. And I would just tell you the same thing. Whether it's schools, I'd love to talk to you about CSAPs are coming up next week. It's unbelievable.
I understand all of that. Yeah. But you know what? I don't think you have to have an extensive background in education to figure out that you do not run an organization that favors one group of people as opposed to another group of people, and that when somebody has a problem and it revolves around their religion, that what you try to do is you try to figure out a way to accommodate everybody. You just don't stand pat and say, well, we're not going to change things because that rule's been around for 80 years. Listen, if we ran this society that way, we'd be in a hell of a shape. Women wouldn't be able to vote. Blacks would sit at the back of the bus. Jews, Irish, Orientals, any number of people you could name would be discriminated against. I don't think you want to live in that kind of society.
Preaching to the choir, Jay.
That's why you have to make the accommodations, and you've got to figure things out. And reasonable, intelligent adults can unravel something.
And so these fellas keep winning, and so what happens then?
Well, what do you mean? Who keeps winning?
The Jewish school.
If they keep winning, you accommodate them.
You just keep accommodating.
Yes, you keep accommodating them because that's what life in America in 2008 is all about. It's about being sensitive to people's needs. It's about accommodation, and it's about fitting everybody in and not singling people out based on race, gender, or religious beliefs.
Well, you know, you are correct, and actually that's an interesting thing that goes all the way back to Amendment 2. That was basically what started. It was an application that said, I'm not gay. You know,
I understand what you're saying, but I hate to inform you about something. As somebody who's Jewish,
yes,
this kind of behavior has gone on for the majority of my lifetime, and I'm now 55 years old, and my parents experienced it, and their parents experienced it, and this is not 1928, 1945, 1955. It's 2008, and it's time that we put an end to this kind of ridiculous behavior.
I would agree. You know, right now they're caught between a rock and a hard place. I say that's you become proactive and you sit down before and try to figure this out and say, okay, but you know, and maybe they should have done this with the fact that the wrestlers that I witnessed, and I'm talking 10, 15 years ago, that we would be at tournaments and a kid would forfeit and your kid would win first because the other kid could not wrestle. So if anything on your side that I would totally agree, right now I don't believe that the accommodations is just practical. But in terms of being on your side, this is not new. This was coming down the pike. It's going to be in the future, and I totally agree with you that they need to put this on the front burner over the next year and deal with this big time. So, could I say one thing? I listen to you every morning, and I am a draftee, 1970. I was drafted with an 8-month-old baby, so this Cheney's family deferment. I'd love to talk to you about how wrong he is there. If you were a student, you can't be a family, and I'm walking existence. But I am really saddened that I listen every single morning, read the paper, and I am really saddened. In 3 weeks, I have not heard the war. I just have not heard the war.
Well, the war came up in the Democratic debate the other night.
While we're talking coaching, yeah, I agree. While we're talking coaching, one of the ways I win is to distract you, and they are just professionals at distraction.
Well,
I want to know where Abramoff is. I want to know where Foley is.
All right, we'd have to talk about that another time. Michael,
I'd love to, man.
Thank you. You're welcome.
I love
here.
You.
You're welcome here anytime, man.
I got too much to talk about. You know, well, it's just crazy.
I love guys like you too. Take care, man.
And I'd love to talk about education because you said one time the problem with education. I'd like to just...
All right, well, we'll get into it. You can call any day after 9 o'clock, talk about anything you want to talk about.
And your Mary must be a dream, pal. That's all I can tell you.
I'm very lucky. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, bye-bye.
All right, 8:52, 52 minutes after the hour, John Turk, traffic. 8:57, 57 minutes after the hour here. AM 760 Progressive Talk. Jay Marvin, good morning. High today, 60. All right, I got time to squeeze one more call in. Let me start with Vic in Fort Collins. Vic, go ahead, man. You got about a minute.
Hey, Jay, I'm the first-time caller. I'm just listening to your show. I listen to it all the time. But I see this from a little different perspective. I think we have intolerance on both sides. Religions, by their nature, are intolerant of many things. And so they have a 2,000-year-old rule that they're intolerant on. The state has a 80-year-old rule that they're intolerant on. This is where we always come down to religious things, is they're intolerant of many other rules, many other governments, many other things. And I guess that's all I have to say here. We're talking about intolerance on both sides.
Yeah, the only thing I can answer is that Jews I know are intolerant. They're intolerant about a couple of things. One, anti-Semitism, and two, sometimes interfaith marriage. But other than that, I don't know about much else. Vic, thanks, man. Have a good day.
Take care of yourself.
Okay, bye-bye. You too. All right, coming up next, open phones. We throw open the phones. We do whatever it is you want to do. Stick around.